Ever wonder why 95% of leads do not convert? Why cold call rates are down and prospects don't open our emails? Why our responses of robocalls and implanting pixels to track user interaction, mostly without permission, is backfiring spectacularly? Well, that's what we intend to find out here in the Buyerside Chat podcast. There are scores of podcasts about selling, but most miss the shift that has come upon the buying-selling process. The initiative has since moved from the supply to the demand side. The Buyerside Chat, your podcast of record for B2B buying, talks to actual buyers, persons, not personas, in the quest to understand the real buyer's journey, their trials and tribulations, challenges and outcomes they're striving for. Welcome to the Buyerside Chat. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Today we have with us Ganesh Shenbagaraman, partner at Winning by Design, a premier provider of strategy consulting and coaching programs for sales and customer success organizations in the technology industry.
The growth of cloud and SaaS has kind of made consumption and buying in a more micro fashion. So it's no longer this buying of this monolithic large application, even at the enterprise level. The availability of the cloud and SaaS, which makes companies offer solutions which are much easier to buy, smaller ticket price, and then grow, where you see so many new startups coming up. The capital needed to start a company with the innovative idea is very low. So more solutions are coming out there. Customers have now gone to the whole buying pattern of buying more solutions every quarter. To us, as we are selling solution, what that means is the seller-centric processes and how we think about customers is no longer valid. It's now the time to be part of the buyer journey. Right? Because 90% of the buyer decision is done without even interacting with a company. The function of a marketing and MQL is pretty much education and awareness.
Ganesh Shenbagaraman is a partner at Winning by Design. He comes with extensive experience in solution sales, sales operations, inside sales, and customer success at VC-backed startups and global enterprises. He has a successful track record in sales acceleration using global teams and leveraging mature sales management techniques. His broad management and technical experience emphasize operational strategy, planning, financial control, high quality execution, diverse talent acquisition, and leading high performing teams. With a career primarily in software sales, Ganesh brings a balance of skills in venture integration and global go-to-market strategy execution. Ganesh is a strong leader recognized for the ability to drive change and inspire others to excel. Winning by Design is founded by Jaco van der Kuy, was recently named the number one sales training and coaching company by G2 and is working with 400 plus global organizations. Now, on to this interesting and insightful episode with Ganesh Shenbagaraman. Ganesh, welcome to the Buyerside Chat. I'm really thrilled that we could make the time and we are talking today with your huge experience looking at the sales process and how it has morphed over the last two decades. Where do you see the buyer is headed? How have they changed?
I think there's, again, Sumanjan, nice to talking to you today. And then, in some other time we would have done face-to-face. Yes. Now we are in a new world, and this is a new way of buying, new way of selling, new way of consuming, right?
Yeah.
So I think there is, I don't think it's been one drastic change. I think it's been a gradual process, right? And there are a couple of secular trends that have been going on, which has kind of accelerated the change, right? I think the first thing I look at is the growth of cloud and SaaS, right, has kind of made consumption and buying in a more micro fashion, right? So it's no longer this buying of this monolithic large application, right, even at the enterprise level. So the consumers have, or the buyers have now trained themselves to be able to try before they buy, right, in a big way. So that's one big secular change. The second secular change is it's no longer about budget, because now that they can, because the purchase price have come down, because it's you're buying small, trying it out before you deploy in a bigger scale. Buyers, enterprise buyers are buying like in an average, on an average about 10 different SaaS solutions every quarter. So from a buyer's perspective, it's no longer about whether they have the budget. It's whether your solution is in the top priority. The third shift is previously, historically, enterprise buyers always were very, risk averse, right? So in their mindset, they always wanted to make a decision for which they would not be fired, right? So they went with, I would say, the Fortune 100 companies for whatever solution they had, right? Whether it's a technology or it's a service, they always went to either a big five consulting company or they went to a one of the big tech companies, right? Because nobody would blame them. They won't lose their job. Even if things go wrong, the bigger companies can recoup and recover. That has changed. And why has that changed? Is because even the large enterprises have now to innovate, right? And where does the innovation come from? The innovation comes from the startups, the smaller companies, right, who are basically pressing the pedal to do things differently, faster, better, cheaper, right? And the customers are looking for those. Even the enterprise customers are looking for those, right? Because they're trying to innovate. Their markets are getting disrupted. A lot of industries are getting disrupted because of the business model change, which means that it opens up a huge market for a lot of the companies. Back in the day, it would be three or four companies that a buyer would look at. Now they're looking at about 20 to 30 different companies, which includes a lot of the smaller companies. The capital needed to start a company with the innovative idea is very low. Because the technology is there. You don't have to go buy servers, put it in a rack, build a solution, right? You just, from your phone, you can actually provision an entire environment.
True.
Right? So more solutions are coming out there. Customers have now gone to the whole buying pattern of buying more solutions every quarter. And then, of course, the last piece is that you're having a next generation of workforce in the enterprise who are more attuned to driving towards innovation, right, to make sure they're showing a difference in their company. So all this has accelerated, and it's only going to accelerate at logarithmic scale, right?
Right.
It's not linear anymore. And those things meant, what to us, as we're selling solution, what that means is the seller-centric processes and how we think about customers is no longer valid. Right? It's now the time to be part of the buyer journey, right? Because 90% of the buyer decision is done without even interacting with a company.
Right.
Right. So that's fundamentally changed. And then again, that goes back to what we spoke earlier. The function of a marketing and MQL is pretty much education and awareness, right? So that's where the whole market is going. Now marketing has to educate and make customers aware of a problem and the solution that you're offering for that problem. And then after that, it is to, for the sales job, it is to make sure that you get them the car that they want, right? Mm. Let them try it. Let them get the feel for it, right? So that it's no longer about what they think about your solution, but is what does they really derive out of your solution.
Got it. So let's move on. I mean, so the role of marketing today is to create this aura, mm-hmm. or familiarity, mm-hmm. or stickiness, so that mm-hmm. you are at least considered at the point of purchase.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. And if possible, you're already in the purchase, right? And that's where the product-led growth comes in, is where you're educated enough. And the last mile of education is getting the person to start trying it or using it, right? As a pilot fashion or just individually. Right? That I think that's where the merging is happening, is B2B and B2C. So a lot of the B2B companies are following the B2C kind of a model.
Absolutely.
Right? Where let's let people try at a unit level before they make a departmental purchase or an enterprise purchase, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, this is another thing which we have been talking about a lot on this show, that we tend to forget that the buyer is the same guy who buys on Amazon when he's mm-hmm. at home. And he wakes up and comes to office and he's expecting mm-hmm. the same level of service or ease mm-hmm. when he is doing B2B purchase.
Right? Exactly. Yep. Right. And good example is we have Slack in front of us, right? Yeah. Slack and Zoom.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They didn't start from the enterprise buyer. They started from me being an enterprise buyer, but I am actually signing up for my own personal consumption. Correct. And usage and get a feel for the product, right? And then look at them now, right? Both are like moving upmarket into the enterprise.
Right.
Yep. And that's not an easy feat, right? It's not an easy feat. And it's changing the entire sales process, right? It's no longer about the field sales going out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And knocking somebody's door.
Yeah. Because you cannot get an entry. So that's another thing. I mean, mm-hmm. One of the articles I was reading, I think in either Wall Street Journal or New York Times, saying that the pandemic actually accelerated things that were already happening. It's mm-hmm. not that people were not going remote, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. The founder of Basecamp was wrote a book about going remote 2 years back. Right?
Right.
A company like Zapier was remote from day one, all remote. Right? So it is not that it is something new, but it sort of forced upon everybody the fact that you need to now think remote. So the point is, when you are not able to get through to the buyer and yet you rely on the same mechanisms, right?
Right.
Where do you see this? What is the response of the buyer in this change scenario?
Yeah, so I think to that point, right? So if you really think about the last 12 months,
mm-hmm.
digital transformation that has happened just for necessity, right? For companies to survive, is 10 years worth of digital transformation has happened in 12 months.
Absolutely.
In the enterprise sale, right? So we always focused on there is a huge separate buying process around InfoSec, around procurement, right? Around compliance, right? These were the long tail activities that drove enterprise sales, right? Now, as you go towards a product-led growth strategy or a product-led sales process where marketing is doing the education, the awareness and everything, you're not doing those long tail activities, which could take months, right? You're not doing that without having a champion or an influencer, right? As more and more people within an enterprise are using the solution at an individual level, you're now starting to build a critical mass, right? That is now emphasizing the value your solution is offering. So that's a big transition, which not only increases the probability of a win, but also reduces the time it requires for you to finish up an InfoSec or a procurement process, right? So that's a big change, right? And that has always been the toughest part for a lot of the companies as they try to go up market, right? To go through the hurdles of InfoSec, go through the security process, go through the paper. A lot of that is the paperwork and check the box kind of activity. Right. For companies coming in, unless you're the top five or top six companies where you have the time and also the support staff to go through that process, it's pretty ominous for a lot of the companies to do that. But now with this asynchronous selling and the new, and since everybody's pushing for digital transformation, that means like even the big companies have to transform pretty quickly. Because their buyers have changed. Their buyers have gone asynchronous. Their buyers are consuming digitally, which means they have to change. And for bigger companies to change into a digital, complete digital is even more difficult, right? Because they have a lot more internal systems. They have a lot more regulatory requirements they have to meet. They have a lot more, a lot more at stake for them, right?
Right.
Public companies.
Right.
So it's far more difficult for them to actually digitally transform. And you as a company going in, being a partner, right, and helping them realize what can be done in a short term, I think that's a big value add that you're offering. It's not just the product.
Let's unpack this a bit. Tell me how is this asynchronous sales or buying process actually manifesting itself? Because if you look at the sales discourse, it is predominantly still synchronous. Make that call. Make that call. I mean, people, coaches tell every day, oh, you must, don't worry, make those 100 calls. That's what will get you the sale. I see books after books being written about the synchronicity and being in front of the customer, even in the era of Zoom and so on. Where is this asynchronous thing actually panning out, and how rapidly is that becoming the norm?
Yeah, it's again, how rapid it becomes within your organization is completely under your control, right? And the question of whether it is happening or not is no longer the question. It is happening. So previously you would have, you would work towards a proposal. You'll build a, you'll have a couple of discovery meetings. You'll have a couple of workshops. You will build all the specs. You'll understand the customer's core issues. You'll build a proposal, and then you will have a face-to-face meeting where you'll walk them through the proposal, right? That's not possible today. There is a simple thing you could do, which is what we call as a series of value exchanges. You could use the technology you have, like a BombBomb or a Loom or a Vidyard, right? Do a quick 2-minute self video, right? Walking the customer through what you've heard, what you understood, and how the proposal that you're going to share with them is structured, and where to look for what. A simple 2 to 2.5 minutes video. Send that over to your champion so he can circulate it internally. Now you're sending it digitally, which means you know how it is getting spread, who's accessing it, and do that before you actually send the actual proposal. Right? So now what you've done is you've taken an in-person meeting, which would have been a proposal walkthrough. You've taken it to a series of 2 sets of asynchronous communication, each having different set of values that you're value offering that you're providing, right? Value exchange, right? And the technology you need for this is something that you can sign up for free, right? True. There's no rocket science here, right?
True.
So that those are simple examples of that, right? And the other thing is that throughout the sales process, when you think about a sales process, what is it? It is a series of meetings, whether virtually or in person, with time spent in between them. And then at each of the series of the meetings, there is some sort of a exchange of value. Now, with asynchronous, when you're doing everything remotely, the flexibility you have is you can shrink the time in between meetings, okay? Mm-hmm. And because you can do it in a recorded fashion, you can also have fewer meetings.
Right.
And then because you're doing it in a recorded fashion, you don't need to have, you're not faced with the same challenge you would have had to orchestrate availability of multiple stakeholders. Okay. So now when you look at number of meetings, the time in between meetings, so each meeting can, like how we have conversion rates, right? We think about MQL to SQL, SQL to SAL, right? And all of that combined gives you a win rate, right? And sales cycle. Now, each meeting can be thought about having a success rate, right? So now if you start calculating the win rate, it is a conversion rate of each meeting and the total time in the meeting, which is almost negligible because you're doing it remote, but it is basically the accumulation of the time in between meetings.
Right.
So now by just controlling the number of meetings and the time in between meetings, you can easily do a 20 to 30% increase in your conversion rates.
It's time for a short break. Ganesh was explaining how in an asynchronous sales process, breaking up and measuring the various steps in the outreach and conversation flow can increase conversion by as much as 30%. After the break, I ask him his views on the elephant in the room in B2B sales, which no one wants to talk about, the 5% conversion problem. Ganesh says it's likely even lesser. We will continue after the break. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful, and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Right before the break, Ganesh was explaining how the asynchronous sales process can increase conversion by 30%. Taking a cue, I asked him his views on the 5% problem in B2B sales. Listen in. That's an interesting point to bring in the other issue we spoke about a bit earlier. That is the 5% problem that we have, right? In B2B, I know these numbers are like debatable because Gartner talks about 5%, Forrester talks about 1.8%. I'll not get drawn into that, but it's a very low single digit number, which is our current lead to conversion industry standard.
Yeah.
And obviously, it takes no genius to say that that's a very bad number, but we are not discussing about it. I mean, it's an elephant in the room, but nobody talks about it.
My guess is it's even worse than what it was 12 months back.
Yes.
There's a lot of these digital channels like LinkedIn. You just look at your own LinkedIn profile, right? The number of emails I get, which are from people who have not even, don't even understand who I am, what I do.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just too much noise now.
Yeah.
So you shut the door, right? So if you take what's happened in the last 12 months, and everybody now, there's so much automation there that you don't even know it's a person or some system doing it or some third party doing it for them.
Right, right.
What do you do when you're flooded with so much inquiries? You just shut it off, which means that whole channel is gone, right?
Yeah.
Which means the actual conversion numbers will be even worse.
True.
Right?
True.
We'll wait for Gartner or somebody to come up with the real numbers, but I'm guessing it's going to be way worse than what it was 18 months back.
Right. So how do we actually come out and do meaningful discussions, shorten the sales cycle, and yet come out with a conversion rate which is 30-40% better than where we are? Because 40% better or 5% still takes us to only 7%, right? It's still less than 1 in 10 that we are converting, talking about. I mean, ideally, it should be more like 3 or 4 in 10 than otherwise. And of course, it's a complex situation because there are five other guys after the same 10 guys, right? End of the day. So it's not that you are in a unique situation. I have identified you and nobody else knows about you. That's not possible, right? It's too much of data out there, too much of information. So how do you actually manage this? How do you use this asynchronous selling era to actually break through this situation which we have created over the last 20 years?
Right. I think it'll all go down. It'll all comes down to what we call as the three R's, right? Research, relevance, and result or reward, right? So all those three put together is a compelling way to do a value exchange. When they're having interaction, right? Whether the other person responds to you or not, you want to make sure that one interaction, there has been some value that you have delivered. There may not be any action after that interaction, but at least the person you're interacting with may have taken one aspect. So I think that's the grounding principle you need to have. Is every interaction is not an activity, but it is a value exchange, okay? Which means it changes it from a numbers game to a quality or value game. That's number one, right? The second one is organizations quite often don't leverage the insights and the depth of information they have from the right side of their organization. When I say right side, when you think about Abota, you have the buying journey and then you have the consumption journey, right? So you have you have customers who are using your product, are deriving value, right? So there is a need for companies to go back, look, talk to the CSM organization, talk to the customer support organization, and identify in a very methodological fashion who are the customers that they want more of, right? Hmm. Who are the profitable customers for them, where they have been able to impact their business the most, right? And what are the attributes of that firm or that set of individuals, right? And then also have the stories around how your organization has impacted that individual or that company, right? Mm. And you got to take all that information and bring it back into your prospecting organization. And which means they then can do a research on who's a lookalike for that, mm. right? And once you have a lookalike, you need to do the research on, hey, who's the person? What is the latest information that person has published or has gone through, the company has gone through, that you can then create the relevance, right? And when you're creating the relevance, you're creating with acknowledgement of what that person is going through, right? And also sharing how somebody else had gone through that same scenario and how they managed to achieve a result, right? So that is the level of interaction you need to have, which means it changes the entire formula, right? It's no longer dial for the dollar. So it changes the equation. It's no longer you're like doing 60 dials a day, right? Because even if somebody else is doing the research for them, they still have to consume it. They have to comprehend it and understand it.
True.
Right? So now you're starting to look at, it's not 60 dials. It's now something like 20 dials, right? But the 20 dials is meaningful dials, right? And it's very similar. So whatever we used to do in sales, the actual field sales, is what you're trying to bring back into the prospecting too. Right? So it's no longer you're trying to widen the funnel. You're trying to actually narrow the funnel at the top.
Right?
And the way you do that is establishing that, doing that value exchange from the very first interaction. Right? Which means you've done your research, right? You know that person is going through a particular situation or a pain, right? And you are transmitting information that they can use the moment they read your email, right? It's no longer having catchy or a clickable subject line. It's actually the content of the email or the phone call itself.
Right.
And then that breaks a lot of different models, right? It breaks the entire SDR model, how they are compensated, how they are staffed, how they are resourced, right?
Yeah.
And the tools that they have, right? It changes everything. Once you've done the research and once you understand the buyer, then you can also provoke, right? You can provoke them in terms of thinking differently, rephrasing the problem that they might be facing, right? And all of that is driven towards creating a more enriching conversation with you compared to somebody else.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that when you talk about it and you tell this to a 20-year-old or a 30-year-old SDR, AE, BDR, whatever you have, they will say, this is a lot of work. I might as well make those 100 calls. That's much simpler because I'm not applying myself to this. This is too much of involved work, right?
Yep.
And potentially there lies one of the reasons why this transition is not happening. In the workplace on its own. So that's where the team leadership and all that stuff comes in, right, into play.
Exactly. And think about it, right? If you're a CRO, right, you're saying, okay, let's put a prospecting organization. And you say, oh, you know what? Like, we don't want them to do any research. Let them just dial the phones. But then you're saying that, hey, you know what? The SDR's life is going to be about 12 months, 12 to 18 months. and we want them, their next career path is going to be in as a junior account executive.
Right.
But as a junior account executive, what skill, what core skill do you need? Right. The skill that you need is being able to understand the customer's situation, the pain, right? And be contextual to them in terms of their situation and pain and what you can offer, right? But if you don't expect, if you don't train your SDRs through that 12 to 18 months on getting that skill at some level, right, you're never going to have those SDRs move into a successful sales role, right? And which is what you're starting to see, right? It's like very few SDRs really transition very well into being an actual seller because they're trained, the mind is trained to doing volume.
In fact, I mean, this is a very, very, again, can be a very involved discussion in itself. One of the points you touched upon is how salespeople are compensated. And one, I hear when I'm talking to HR, you know, heads of large companies, a lot of discussion is why should salespeople be incentivized? They're like anybody else. They're doing their job, just like the product guy is doing their job. A sales guy is doing his job. All this whole incentivization structure is because you want to de-risk your own investment in them. Right?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
So that's one point. The other point is that sales folks are understanding that you will get increasing responsibility. You will be moved up the funnel, given more responsibility without really any significant change in how much you are getting paid. And the result is, if you get to the top, you become the VP of sales. The average tenure of the VP of sales is today 1.5 years.
Yep.
18 months. Right? So it's a very we have actually sort of painted ourselves into the corner when you're talking of sales. I mean, from every direction. Right?
Right.
The question that I have is, if you are a new company, so lot of the data and lot of the research and part of the 3 R's are applicable if you already have lots of customers. You can get your definition. You can look alike cohorts and so on. But if you're a new company, how do you go about doing it? Is it to start by analyzing your quote unquote competitor's customer? Is that the starting point?
Yeah. So I generally here Winning by Design, right? We're doing everything we do is in a more scientific and mathematical way, right? So I don't think the best place to start is, you never want to run your business looking at your competitors primarily.
True.
Right?
True.
So let's say if you're a new company, right? You're in the product market fit stage, right? The only piece that you really don't have out of the 3 R's is the last one, the results and reward. Because you don't have existing install base that you can say what they've done. But you build the company around a hypothesis.
Right.
Which is some pain that is being faced. Right. So that hypothesis wasn't built in a vacuum.
Right.
So the research is still there. You can still research whether a brand or individual faces that problem. Right. And the relevance is still there because you can research the company and try to see whether there's any breadcrumbs that indicates that the person has realized that they are facing that particular problem, right? So the first 2 hours are still there, right? The jump that you have to make is once you have that connection using the research and relevance is how do you bridge the gap of the last part where you don't really have an existing customer that you can show, you can prove the value, right? And there are techniques for that, right? That's where you have the early customer benefits where you put the customer, say, as a showcase, right? In a podium where you make them the thought leader, right? For taking the risk. There are concepts of pilots, right? There's a concept of basically giving preferential pricing or lock-in pricing for being the first few customers. Mm-hmm. So there are benefits you can provide that can overshadow the fact that you don't have real customers, right? And then right. you can make sure that your buyer becomes a thought leader, right? Mm-hmm. By association,
right? That's great advice, because I do talk to a lot of startups as well, and this is who sort of understand and sort of they see that the traditional sales model is not working, mm-hmm. and it is not working. That's the truth. Mm-hmm. They get stuck there. That look, I don't have the base, and how do I then move forward? Because the presumption of any of this is to start with analyzing what your existing cohort is doing. And there is no analysis available. So that's a great point.
Like if you think about, if you listen to a lot of the startup founders talk about their company, they always start with their own personal anecdote.
Yeah.
Right? A problem that they faced for which they created the company, right? It's true. So they have it, right? They have it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The Buyer Site Chat is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink enables high-quality interactions between buyers and sellers through presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create personalized sales presentations and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversation. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 650-847-5884. That is 650-847-5884.
Great. Ganesh, thank you very much for your time. And I appreciate your doing this right in the morning. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations with Nico Buck, founder of Digital Procurement Now and ex-Digital Procurement Senior Director of Procter & Gamble, and many others, unraveling in-depth how the real buyers buy. Stay tuned.
But I think the last 15 to 20 years, I think companies have invested a lot in procurement expertise for indirect procurement, which I think is where actually procurement skills are even more valuable, because I think when you look at the offerings from indirect suppliers, I think often they sell you different things, right? So, I mean, if I'm looking for a piece of software, one company will sell me a different piece of software than another company. And while there's ways to compare it, obviously there's a lot more at stake. And I think the team that works on assessing these different options becomes broader and broader. Right. I mean, IT, but also info security, kind of the business. What are the results that we want to achieve? How to achieve those results with this new software, this new technology? So I think the teams that are involved in assessing these options are often more diverse. And I think it also moves the role of procurement from being a buyer to more of a business manager.
Thank you for being with us today on the Buyer Site Chat. This is the podcast of record for the buyer side journey. And those who know, that's the journey that matters. We hope this conversation helped you with insights that you can go and apply right now to your own value transaction process. See you in the next episode of the Buyer Side Journey.